Welcome everybody. I'm Peter Dostal. I'm a Slovakian architect and you are listening to podcast about architecture called How I Met My Architect. Usually this podcast is in Slovak language, but I have a couple of episodes in English. So if you will go through the list of all of them, you could see four episodes from Barcelona with Spanish architects. And today I'm in Prague with one special guest, Vinny Maas from MVRDV. Hello, Vinny.
Hi, nice to meet.
Today we will be talking more conceptually about architecture, I guess. But let's warm up a little bit with the Czech question, because now we are sitting in Czech Republic, in Prague. Your headquarters is in Rotterdam, but you are also teaching in Delft, and you are also teaching in Prague. And those two are the only ones. And I know that you have some past connected to the Czech Republic because you had some professor from Czech Republic. Now, when you are teaching here on Faculty of Architecture, could you tell us shortly how you see the Czech society and architectural field now?
Maybe I should answer your question how I look to Czechia and why I would do it or why I would be here. So there's a couple of things. I see an energy in the Czech society to be more European, to want to strongly to be part of a bigger picture. And so from a certain introversy, it's gradually moving to an extroversy. Both your president is already more reaching out. And it happens also with the architectural society that it was open, I would say, in the 20s and 30s of the last century. With the international movements. And now you see with all the diaspora, all the people that go around, also with the European spirit to collaborate, that especially the Czech Republic has an interest to talk about architecture to the young generation wishes to talk. And I see a certain energy coming up to that, for better and for worse, because we can go deeper in it. That's one. For me personally, I think also it's important to, in a Europe that goes east and knowing that Prague is not east, but is in the center of Europe, but it was a kind of peninsula in the past. So, of this puzzle, and that I think from my practice, it's important. I try to work global. I try to work in many places. I cannot avoid geopolitics. And in that way, I sympathize also with that possible new position of this, say, Middle Eastern European situation. And there I find myself then also confronted with this emerging energy in not only in Czechia, also I see that in Albania, much more exuberant, I would say, but with another history and another kind of time span. And that explains a little bit my interest and also my observation on both the architecture domain and say the political situation. So I work on that. Also, again, for better and for worse.
That could be the question. How tough is to be global? Because you are doing in a lot of countries, so you have quite a short time to see the context, to understand the context, understand the people and the society, and how tough is for you and for Office MVRDV to do it?
It's not tough. It's beautiful and to start with. And it's also, it gives us challenges to see how we can deal with that. Because there are more offices dealing with that. So one thing to say, I think we want to be in dialogue with many places in the world. Because so at the moment that you kick out a country, then for many reasons, what you have to do now in Russia. But then, yeah, we want to stay in dialogue. So we develop a protocol within the office. How can we deal? Why can we make a difference? Can we add something to it? What are bad and good things in countries according to my or our limited observation? And, Can we do something about it, even if it's little? That's a way of a little bit working on the geopolitical situation. But in principle, I think working in the Middle East means that there is a complicated situation in Palestine or in Israel. How working there in both situations, how to work that at the same moment in the Emirates or in Oman, a longer relationship with Oman because of, that will be the next part of your question, is how to deepen then the relationships. So basically the first thing is to be open and to try to engage on the nuances and try to engage in a wider perspective and to apply that on your work. That how to do that is, for me, again, personally, and I think for more people in the office, you fall in love with certain places. You cannot do everything. So in order to deepen, you want to talk longer with the situation. Like Albania is an example that we worked there since 15 years. What can you do then? Because then you can engage, you can see the good and bad things. You can see, you can also try, you have a right to make criticism because you can apply that in a nuanced, manner and say the buildings that come up or the projects in Albania that come up at the moment show in a way how provocation can be used in a country that wants to emerge. Some kind of, it shows a love to encourage development in a country which was the poorest in Europe and was maybe also the weirdest in Europe, and wants to bring in 20 years, go from nothing to almost everything in terms of GDP, in terms of attraction, wants to become part of the European society, and does that, I think, in a very specific and special way, and uses urbanism and architecture to make the country better, to make it safer, to make it less corrupt.
But how are you finding the right balance? We know that you cannot just take the architecture from Rotterdam, for example, and put it to this country because it's not contextual. Their society, maybe they don't accept it or they are not prepared for it. You will build some spectacular architecture which needs the maintenance afterwards. And those stuff happened also, for example, in Georgia. Georgia was the country.
I remember.
And they said, we are going to build a new future with spectacular architecture. And now they have the really big troubles with the maintenance. And now when you go to Georgia and you will see the facade, you see the not good quality. So how you are dealing with that?
Well, your question has more layers. I'm not against spectacular architecture. I think, in general, I think we have to use buildings that somehow show directions and be remarkable, because there is a majority of the built environment which has not a very good quality or has things lacking sometimes. Through architecture that can emphasize things that are lacking or that are, can add to it, people can see it and people can therefore take it with you.
So does it need to be remarkable?
I think remarkability doesn't have to be everywhere. We are talking about like 1% of the build production in general. So the majority of it is actually very modest and actually sometimes very ugly also, and very, I think this kind of the role of remarkable architecture is to somehow to show possibilities that are sometimes impossible in the majority of the built production. So I only plead to use it as an instrument, the making of remarkable buildings. Some people say iconic, some people say spectacular, to test futures, to show directions, to discuss directions, and also to encourage potential experimentation, which we need in our societies to think about the future and to make new directions. So that's one. The second element, I love diversity. I know that there are architects that copy themselves and put the same kind of architecture everywhere over the planet. And I hope that our work shows that we go into the context in that way. In order to understand the context, you have to fall in love to deal with a society, with the complexity of that specific zone. You have to avoid clichés about that society. That's another part. I will not make immediately like crystal buildings in Czechia. Don't worry. So because that is the, because that emphasizes a specific role unless it adds to innovation. So that's one. I hope that our projects can be conceived as when we do the pyramid in Tirana. It looks like that. Another aspect that I cannot avoid, but I think is also very helpful, is the reflection from outside on a society. So having global perspectives, what is an agenda on climate, on accessibility, on the social agenda, on law systems, on fiscalities, on openness, on non-openness, on participation, that can then help a little bit to put that in this contextual architecture, to update or to criticize certain aspects that are, especially in urbanism, lacking sometimes from that perspective. So you can see that, I think, in our method at the moment in the here in the faculty, to work on the Czech Republic as an entity. So we show how good Czechia is in that book, in this research that comes out soon. So, for instance, I was shocked that the water quality in the rivers is worse than I thought it would be compared to other, say, countries in Europe. But I'm talking about the way how sewage systems sometimes are entering some of your streams. I'm also pointing out how the agriculture is not that clean and spills out in the water systems here and there. So it's more like sewers management than your, say, your factories of water that are dealing with this issue.
So you start like an architect, and at the end, you will find a problem in a sewer system, and you want to solve the sewer system, right?
No, in the case of water, that's a very important part of our urbanism in the future, because it's like we worked the same way in Switzerland on what is the program of Switzerland, and there you have to keep the water longer before it goes into the Rhine. Let's give an example, and how to store that in soils, in water systems in cities, and in bassins, in small lakes or infiltration systems. That changes the landscape and the cities a lot more than you think. So it is a way of trying to find agendas for our cities and how to incorporate that into our urbanism and into our architectures. And here in Prague, I would dream that some of the parks next to the river, to the Moldau, that they would actually be more floodable, and to have them like not swamps, but like beach-like things. That could be, Malostranska, for instance, that would be great to imagine certain kind of, say, new kind of parks that would enlarge that river bassin and to protect the river, the environment from flooding. Because I need more than only Malostranska, and I need the whole bassin to do that. But
yeah, that's funny. You are similar than, for example, Bjarke Ingels, because when I'm watching some of his lectures, he usually starts like 20 minutes. He's talking like a kind of an eco-scientist, and he's talking about the nature, about the footprint of the buildings, and he's doing from the whole world scale to the super small scale and one house scale according to the footprint. And I was also watching one of your lecture. It was really similar. So please tell us how come that you, like a world known architect, you switch from designing a conventional building to the questioning the architecture on the whole world scale?
I mean, one thing, of course, to say first that Bjarke and me, we look to each other. I think so. We are kind of companions in the same struggle, to bring this agenda into our little things also. So one thing to add to that, I'm an architect, I'm a landscape architect, and I'm an urbanist by training. I even started as a florist when I was a kid, and because of my parents, they had a garden center, and I became garden architect first, and then went into it. So that already helped. Then I went into architecture. That already helped, I think, to go beyond the object, beyond the little cube house, one could say, and to say, okay, what is needed. For, well, I mean, if I calculate simply the amount of houses that we have in the world, or the amount of tables or the amount of products, then I think if we improve a house and multiply the effect is tremendous on a global scale. So it informs our architecture, these global overviews. It helps to give set an agenda to it. And it it connects also with an ambition that I think I share not only with Bjarke, but also with a big young generation of to do something on this planet, to deal with the fight. So to deal with the social inequality, to deal with the green development that is needed. And to, we can wait to others. I mean, in my case, I can wait to other scientists prove it. No, I have to do it also. So it was my ambition to span the gap. How is it between those two scales, two extremities, to have that and more than ever then this combination of research and building becomes more important and is also doable to do it, and the fact that universities give you also ways of exploring that they say don't only design the houses, but yes, your research is on the city of the future, or your research is on the effect of plants on the built environment, etc. That makes, and you visualize it, then you can contribute a little bit to that agenda, to this gap that is between the two scales.
But does it make sense to try to solve it on a whole world scale? Because history showed us that if you want to improve something, those improvements are always step by step.
Very true. It's not done in one go. And I mean, landscape architects are by nature much more thinking about time than architects. Architects think only about one building is ready next year, done, and that's it. So there's a landscape architects have to treat basically with management over time, with maintenance, with the power of nature, and that is what we can learn from them and turn it and to use that. And I know it's step by step. But exactly that step by step is an interesting point, because what is that step that you do? It could be a prototype of what the world of the future could be and how it could look like. And that, I think, gives content to the word remarkable architecture, what we just discussed. It gives like an infill that we need this kind of past prototypes, examples to test it. What this new configuration of cities can be. And therefore I defend also the system of cultural system of trying to test that. And there can be failures. Huh? And I know that Czechia has a kind of they want to avoid failures because of the past. So there is a cultural tension on that. And the Netherlands has more like will to experiment for sake of existence, I would say. And but that's part of the game, because we are thinking about longer process, longer time. And yeah, we don't know the future exactly, but we can do already some parts.
So we can summarize it like that. If only 1% of this big vision will move forward, it's kind of achievement.
True. And then to add to that, because it will be very different, because this 1% will behave differently in a desert than it will behave, say, in Norwegian land, or than it will do in the Netherlands, or than it will be in Czechia. I think that's the fascinating component of trying to be global and as well being local.
So let me ask a little bit different question. This what we are talking about now is very connected to some research and analysis and what you do in your studio or in also in Y Factory. This is something you need time and money to do it, to this type of research. You have the global office, 5 offices all around the world, a lot of people, more than 200 people. I'm working in the office with 50 people, and we don't have a budget and time to do this type of research. So in which scale of the studio you just have time and budget to do it, to make a research, which is very important.
A beautiful question. By the way, it's 350 people that we mentioned in the office, but at the moment, and there are more universities. Yeah, I mean, I'm happy that we have so many people so they can work and concentrate on different zones. And they can, I'm happy that also in the office we have special groups that can manage a bit the complexity of what you just try to paint. I started maybe 20 years ago with like a group in the office that can do scripting. So that's concentrating on, developing, say, software to make our buildings ourselves. And so it transforms data into products, like the Valley building in Amsterdam, where the facade is a composition of like balconies and bay windows and planters and terraces stacked on top of each other. But by having parameters on cost, having parameters on soil, having parameters of light, on wind, on privacy, we could compose this fractalized landscape, vertical landscape of this rock we call the Valley. So that's why that shows the kind of importance to dismantle our complexity and to turn it into productivity and to turn it into makeable architecture. This counts for urbanism even more everybody has a voice. Everybody wants to say something about it, how to turn that into a kind of 50% plus. So in democracy, in participation, statistical truths or directions. That's what also, again, this scripting group tries to do. In order to understand our ecological behavior, and we make at the moment a footprint calculator. Every element that we do it needs to be compensated by nature or by the ecological footprint that we do. So you want to do the footprint, bring it to one almost, to keep it to the complete recycling element. So we do that calculator. We do it both on the scale of a building, of a neighborhood, say a city plan, as well as of a country. So like Luxembourg is now, what we do there is this footprint calculator helps them to formulate a program on the future of Luxembourg country and to negotiate economies and budgets for that. That is one thing what the office tries to do, to already invest over time in that kind of tool. And that kind of tools to deal with. So we did that partly with the help of universities. So we teach in universities to develop software already 20 years. You can read it in KM3. I did a big chapter on that. And we were fascinated that from the very beginning. So we didn't have any money. Software is super expensive, but like startups, you just do. It's somehow this culture of being a startup is what that we continue somehow, even after 30 years, to hopefully have that. So now this group of MVRV Next, it's called, and MVRV Climate, young kids try to simply develop it. And how to put money in that? Yeah, you get some money from a commercial client that wants to also contribute to that, or you some of your earnings you put it in, and the generic, I would say the fact that it's also kind of usable for more people, that's what you try then in universities. So I'm happy that we have an internal research department in the office, gradually now growing bigger because of. Yeah, we grow a little bit bigger. So the fact that we have a bigger office, I can pay more for that. But universities, I'm also very happy always to have a relationship with that. But it's public, but it's not commercial. Huh? So I have to do things in a university where that is open source that everybody can see, that's not connected to a kind of copyright issue in an office. It is, and it's public task also that I can do. But the universities are also the places where you can experiment more than in the office. We use public budgets basically to do something to improve the conditions for architecture and also to bring it one step further. I mean, in this kind of places, young students have to be learned, not only a profession, but have to think also about the future and so that is what we can do here. We can do here things that we cannot do in the office only. Here we can speculate further. Here is there a budget of that laboratory to test this new softwares that we that can be given to the world. Here we can test, like, possible, say, governmental collaborationships on like how to improve a country or how to improve a city. Some things that you cannot always do in an office. So I'm very happy that hopefully this method that I try to embody, that it will be also now for everybody, that more that your office can do that also in the future, that we try to establish a culture where, say, the practice talks with the academia and where the academia becomes sexy and becomes like respectful and visible, and that communicates with society, and that sometimes the university world is so introvert. And when I compare that, for instance, with Wageningen University, which is an agricultural university in the Netherlands, say the Soekdal of the Netherlands, and there every week they show on the front page of the national newspapers their recent explorations. So with just short messages, this comes out, beautiful. It's like, wow, what agronomy can do. Wow, what water management can do. That you can see it on our front page of the newspaper every, that is what we have to stay in contact between the two.
This reminds me some mindset from deep communism and socialism, which we had in Czechoslovakia. It was exactly like this. Like each month you could watch in TV that in those fabricas or industry, we built 200 cars, and those carpenters, they have done 1,000 of these, and so like promoting what the country is doing on all of the parts.
I'm very aware that this history, what you describe, has led to an enormous skepticism in these countries on national planning, for instance, or this kind of agendas, actually thinking about the future. It has harmed a little bit your progress. And because on one hand, I think it's very, because it, at the moment it's harder to discuss in that way what national planning can do because of that, because you are so skeptical what happened with that type of planning. And I agree with you on that. Wait a minute. Let's say the national plans of those days were, as limited. You can also, two things. One, liberty is extremely important. Individualism, you have to give place. But it touches collectivism. At a certain moment, you need to have a collective answer on infrastructure. You need in order to, for investments, but you as an individual cannot play. So, and means just the amount of high speed rail links in Czechia is zero. I mean, like, so there is even the water system needs improvement. You can only do it collectively. So I'm a bit afraid that when you refer too much to those times, and then you are blind yourself a little bit of the necessities that are how to build it then, how to give an answer. Is yes, it has to be participatory. Yes, it has to be open-minded. Yes, it has to give space for reflection and criticism in a way, but it also has to give for production in a way, and measuring what we are doing in a way. So what you're suggesting is very exemplary.
Probably you said it right, that we are very skeptical because our liberty and freedom was very touched that time.
Yeah. Education is a good thing. The type of education you can talk about, that you get maybe in a certain period in time, limited amount and limited access to certain kind of knowledge and was filtered. Yeah, that is the criticism. But I think there is nothing against openness. There's nothing against communication on each other's initiatives. And you're locked also in a specific kind of economy.
Since you are a teacher now in Delft or in Prague, and you are teaching architecture, what is the most important stuff to inject to the students in terms of maybe thinking like an architect?
What I see is, and that depends a bit on the place. Here again, your observation on diversity of places is also happening in education. Certain schools are already much more experimental than others. I mean, I was witnessing in Prague that the education was very much oriented towards designing white cubic houses with square windows. Okay. So which is covering this territories. So it missed a bit the larger agenda, was so that's what I tried to add. And I find the students that some of them are, for them it's a relief than to enter this kind of studios where you can think about a bigger scale in a free way, in a way. And others are very skeptical about it, exactly on the points that we're discussing, because they have a certain fear also to go in that direction. It's a new territory and they are very hooked to that stiff way of educating people. That's different in Delft, where the issue of everything is possible has been cultivated already for 20 years. So their concentration is a very important subject. So how to concentrate on a subject and deepening it. Because in opening the box that happened the last 20 years in the Netherlands, etc. But now it's maybe hard to transform this opening act into possible, makeable new buildings or new kind of urbanism or new kind of architecture. So you concentrate more on in-depth studies on material, how good is biological material. You turn in-depth on, can we make mobility that is changeable? What is the density that we should allow for to make new tram lines? So you go very much into technology that serves the bigger perspectives. And that is, so it becomes hardcore research again. That's instead of the house, I think our new research on what we call the 4-minute city, so that we can achieve in 4 minutes, we can do that. What kind of densities are needed in any type of vehicle, from a tram to say a horse, that will be then shown in this these models that we then develop. So that helps then to convince governments to make density a certain moment. That helps them to also to steer the traffic department, which is normally very incestuous and inside, to open up potential research. So, but that is, say, the state of the art, what we achieved, I think, in the Netherlands or in other places to make more in-depth researches. Here in Prague, first I've opened the box already to get that. I have to open the box in the relationship with the agricultural university or with the department of, say, chemistry here to make new products. At the moment, there was no collaboration between the different, say, faculties to do that. And that is fascinating to explore. So again, there are different, say, student communities.
And do you think, this like Czech society is a little bit moving forward in these topics, because the architecture is always reflection of society,
yeah.
And this is what you are talking about, those small steps, because this is a small step, yeah, for society if it is moving forward.
Well, in the case of Czech Republic, you see more competitions than ever before. So so you see energy to engage foreign architects and also local architects to make more quality development. The competitions are better organized than 5 years ago, and so that's also that's one part of the. There's more prizes, more awards, which also help to establish that, to develop the role of architecture in a society that comes up. So there's more energy, as I said before, between architects and architectural offices do new things. They travel around. Czech Republic has the highest amount of 3D printing companies, if I compare that to other countries in Europe. So hidden somewhere in your barns and in your boxes, you do incredible stuff. And so there's a contradiction here. You're in a time of transition, and I hope I can emphasize a little bit like a kind of direction that is coming out of the box. It's basically coming out, becomes stronger. I think Europe needs it. The world needs it. And you also facilitate that a little bit more and more and more. You say more. I mean, Ostrava, Brno and Prague all say we are the new technological centers. Well, there are companies that become big in it. Some from Taiwan, some from the Netherlands that are based. ASML is working here. So there is more relationship in that than we compared it with 10 years ago. So I try to paint a little bit the transition. Then I can say what it can be here. Is there skepticism? Yes. In your veins, But but it is confronted with this transition, and I only am a spokesman, I think, for the transition.
But when you are saying that you are talking with the governments, for how long are you talking and, let me say, small persuading the governments about those visions? For how long?
In Czech Republic?
Maybe in general.
In general, I worked.
You are working in a lot of countries.
Yeah, but that was always part of the game, to talk with and sometimes it went quick and sometimes it takes longer. I mean, I've worked a long time in Africa with UNESCO to change basically the perception of monuments in Kenya and in Tanzania and in Yemen. And to not only protect them, but to embed them or to use them better. And to and that was a beautiful project where the government, the minister of conservation, Richard Leakey, was a fantastic person who was very active in trying to avoid that, say, former monumental cities would transform into new Benidorms along the coast in Swahili culture, or to open up a little bit all the treasures that are hidden under the sand. So there was, and then to give it a position in that society, or to make the national parks bigger, even to protect elephants, and to how to transform the agricultural communities around Samburu land to make that. So it was a kind of fascinating relationship between investors and government. It was very active in those days in Eastern Africa. And that continues. I mean, in the Netherlands, the relationship with the government is super strong over time already. There's a national architect, there is a research group, there are planning bureaus which are independent and can criticize the government and have budgets, say around 7 million per year to do research on it. So I already by nature try to work with them and they form teams and so I believe I believe in the public sector. It's one of the tools to do things that you cannot do in the commercial sector. So I'm not afraid of it. And I'm happy that there are beauty committees in the Netherlands that judge your architecture in respect of the policy.
That's something what I also read. What does these committees doing?
I didn't found them because it exists already a long time and it has transformed over time in a much more nuanced way. But basically there is a policy of non-cities, what should urbanism be of the future in cities, and they make, say, rules what have to be applied in the buildings, from green to aesthetics also. And these rules of aesthetics are then saying something, how can modern interpretations be combined with old or with like characterful elements of the of a specific city, and because they have its characters. And this kind of beauty committee, a group of architects, around 20, they every project they say good, bad, or ugly, or somewhere in between, and that helps basically to improve the quality of the architecture in general, what the city of the future should be.
But do they say sometimes that this building is not good because of the context, because of the architecture, because not each building is really successful?
Very true. They will say it also. They will not approve.
And what next?
And what next? There are two ways. You have to change. Because that's in our law, the Dutch law, that then when a company, when this beauty committee says no, you have to work till the beauty committee says yes. That's the general rule. But politics can also say go contraire, as it says, go contraire. And if they find that this committee is not taking into account certain kind of aspects, or that it becomes that doesn't happen always. That when the if you go contraire, it's very public, and you have to give good argumentation to the society and so otherwise you get protests, you get less votes in the future. So the system works pretty well to have a nuanced perspective on aesthetics and quality. It tames the developers. Let me say they have to do something responsible to it. That it helps also architects to defend their work, and they criticize if architecture is not that good. So,
but do you know about some other countries which they have this type of a committee of beauty in architecture? Because I never heard about it.
No, it is quite Dutch, I agree. And also in Flanders, so in Belgium, it's now applied. The role of urbanism has become stronger. They organize it in a different way. France has also quite stronger rules in many cities on, so it's not only heritage. Eh? It is not driven by heritage. It's driven by quality in the general term. I mean, here you have the role of heritage is very important, but then, yeah, the role of innovation is then very limited.
I have also a couple of personal questions. What are you talking about with the other star architects when you meet on a coffee, for example? What are you talking about architecture or about the kids or what you have done yesterday? What are you talking about with Bjarke or Rem Koolhaas when you meet with those guys?
First to say, we don't meet that much. And sometimes you have conferences. I mean, I remember a conference that I gave a lecture after Bjarke, and then Bjarke was surprised that I did so much research. Man, what do you do with all this? You have so much research. I'm jealous. So, and you already said. So that's what was a remark that you're quite direct, I think, in general. Like, don't hesitate what to think. Rem is another person, but he's also quite direct, immediately saying, not this or not that. And that's, and I worked in his office. So that also would like, sometimes a moment to reflect on it. I think besides talking with each other, we have also a relationship in reacting to and on each other's work. We are all aware that we have our niche market and we are all aware, we are all competitive. Also, but you want to improve things sometimes. I mean, my relationship with OMA also that I want to do, that I saw, I mean, I love what OMA did and do on the global agenda. And I love the analysis, the journalistic analysis do, but I want to bring it into data. So my answer was, I love you, but I add this to it. So I hope that therefore I want to express with that the level of communication is not only in talking about your private life. It's talking of, it's actually our architecture is also a way of communicating towards each other. And I think that's, I think historically an interesting, subject, and the architectures of these offices, how they transform over time, how they react to each other.
I will also ask about inspiration. What is inspiration for you? Because your day is counted by hours, you know, and your schedule is very tight. And sometimes everybody wants to tear a small stuff from you, and you are inspiration for a lot of people. But what inspires you, or when you have time to inspire yourself, and how?
Wow, that's a big question. But I mean, I love, for instance, that, I mean, students inspire. Can be like yesterday, Brno workshop on showing the future of the hills within the city. And then we found a method how to show beauty, a new kind of beauty in it. You will see that maybe in an exhibition in 2 months. That was very inspirational. And with there were 40 students and then to come up with ideas. And it's very direct. It was inspirational then because you have 2 hours with the students and they're very interactive. They're made say yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. So that was very inspirational to give one. Yeah, but I love also the Rotterdam Film Festival, which is like one of the best films, art films in the world, even I think some of the better than the Berlinale, are coming together. So already from 40 years ago, and I love to go there. And then surprises that are coming out of that kind of and because filmmakers have they can do personal observations on the world, and they can make storytellings that makes it nuance and emotional. So there is a beauty that I hope that our architecture also somehow does. But it's like, and then this film festival makes it fantastic. And I love people, basically, just that inspire me. Any conversation, any dinner.
When I was in contact with your assistants to try to try to schedule this meeting. I saw that your day is planned by hours and you are all the time moving forward. You are here 2 hours, you are there 4 hours. How can you live with that, that your life is scheduled by hours, by someone?
No, but sometimes I have also a cross in the agenda, and then which means that I don't do it at that moment. Don't worry. But it's no, I love it also, because this world is so big and so beautiful with so many people that and my life is also short. So it's kind of a way of trying to, and my ambitions are maybe also a bit big. So I try to combine that in that way, in this richness of people and of gatherings are providing not only inspiration, but also depth. And I love also a Zoom with a client in Bratislava, and then to these days to come to a conclusion. You see the working with people is one of the most fascinating components, because then you can innovate. Then you, at a certain moment, oh, I see your point. I mean, that's so important. This moment, I see your point. I have clients that where you have meetings only for 5 minutes. They're very direct. And they also understand my advice. Then I tell him or her, don't do that. Do that direction and show it. Well, sure. But can you work it out? Next time. So you, and that's 5 minutes. So this quickness is also, is something, tells something about our brains and our intelligence, as I hope.
How do you have so much energy and concentration to do it? Because according to analysis, when you are doing a concentration job through the day, you are able to concentrate 4 hours, not 8. And you are going from meeting to meeting, and everybody wants your 100% concentration. So where do you gain your energy and concentration?
I get that energy by them, by the fact that you are allowed or to get the opportunity to talk about this or to make something. I love also making. That gives me a lot of energy. I mean, at the moment that you see the first, say, wooden structure or the coming up in a building, and that's very addictive. Huh? That is a kind of a, oh, okay, wow, it works, or it's coming up. So so what I would like to say, the work itself is inspirational. That, and I hope that everybody can have that in his or her job.
But have you had sometimes a feeling kind of a burnout?
No. Cannot give more nuance to that?
Yeah, no, it's fine. But for the whole life of 40 years, or I don't know how long are you in architecture?
I think I'm now 40 years.
40 years. You have never been like tired?
Well, I sleep very well. That's one element. But no, I hate that. So, and physically, I'm happy that I can. I run, of course. Yeah. And 3 times a week, 4 times a week, yeah.
And how do you regenerate yourself?
That's already one way of regenerating. And sleeping is it? I sleep in planes always like immediately.
Really?
And I also don't like flying. I mean, I like flying, but also because it's quiet for a moment. So then, but then I think also only the best infill is to regenerate.
How often are you at home? Because you are traveling a lot.
Yeah.
Your home is at Rotterdam, yeah. I guess. So how often are you at home with your family?
Well, yeah, it's indeed 3 days per week, I think. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, in Rotterdam. It goes up and down in terms of how much are you. And then indeed the office, I could just go on my bike to the office, and then because it's close, and you go to your cafe in the neighborhood, or you go to meet friends. And
did you see, for example, some effect of Corona or COVID? Because when you are in your tight schedule and you are traveling a lot, you are thinking and everything, solving a lot of projects, a lot of problems, a lot of discussions. And that time when we had the Corona and you had to be stuck at home, did you feel some like slowing down a bit?
Because a little bit, of course, that like everybody did.
That you could have some time to think, to rest a little bit, and just rethink your.
Yeah, but I was also direction. Eagerly looking forward to the life after Corona. So, but there are other effects that maybe we would like to point out. I think that as an office, we accepted more to have satellite offices. we are easier to make like other offices in other countries to do partly the work. So that was before Corona. We were a bit hesitant on that because we know offices that were split because of having satellites. But we stepped over that because it simply replaces quite a lot of the traveling. And I'm also very happy with that effect of Corona. So, I mean, even considering maybe also an office in Prague is easier to do in these ways. You know, with the formulas, you know how to, so it's kind of it makes us more, say in a way more nomadic, because you
global.
More global than I think that was one of the bigger effects of COVID. And I was happy that I could write during COVID. That's true, and that's sometimes hard to find. But I do like still okay. Take 2 hours to make a text for a competition or for a pamphlet. That is a yeah.
Thank you very much that we could go through all of those topics.
Oh, okay.
And let's move on to the regular rubric at the end, which are the same questions for each guest. Question number one is, what is your the most favorite failure? Let me describe it for you. Okay. That's something negative, what happened to you, but at the end, it ended up with something very positive.
My God, I don't know. I honestly don't know. I think sometimes I learn from competitions that I think, for instance, that the prize winner was truly better. That's a very learning curve. That's why you asked that question, because it gives you indeed more relativation. It sharpens yourself and gives you also new insights.
What is your the most negative personal quality?
My most negative one? Wow. I can be, of course, very demanding in a way. Like, expect people that they come up with professional answers in very quick way. One hand, that is that speed is part of our work and life. I cannot waste too much time. I always have a principal feeling that I think that everybody is smart. That's just in my blood because I come from a village, and it was like, I think everybody is smart too. So I expect also then smartness from everybody, which is maybe not true, but I want to see the positive part. So that drives me in that case.
But when you are talking about the speed in architecture, you can have the speed solutions, or you can have the high quality solutions. Are you able to achieve really good things or really good results when it's very, very quickly?
Yeah, more and more, actually. You get more experience somehow into formulate. I always compare that with the word intuition. And you think intuition, what is that? Is that an emotion or is that something? Intuition is for me, is the highest amount of concentration and bringing all the parameters to all the complexities in one go. So it's actually like a super software program that's covering the word intuition. So, and that is happening ever, all the paradoxes somehow together. That's happening in sometimes we train ourselves a little bit to even in short competitions more and more to see where are the vulnerabilities, and how to come up with a kind of smart direct answer that positions all the nuances that are surrounding architecture in a way, so that it here speed and quality comes together. This kind of moment X, this 1 second, this split second, but that's the word intuition, where this comes together. That's the beauty of projects.
Let's be positive then. What is your the best personal quality?
I hope, because that's that my best element is somehow to, is I hope that I am respectful and empathetic to people. That I somehow am not like a bossy or not like, or not looking down on people, or that can happen sometimes, I think, in yeah, it's star architects that they behave like prima donnas somehow. And there is a confusion in there because I think you have to be nice. Niceness, I think, brings more than elitism and gives more space for collaboration and for an egalitarian solution. Then that doesn't mean that you have to be, again, smart or distinctive and sometimes a bit decisive. So your combination of questions is beautiful because on one hand, I try to be nice and listening and careful, and you have to guide. You have to come to a conclusion and to a decision, and you have to direct at that moment.
That's exactly when you are kind of a visionary and you want to lead or you want to dart someone. Yeah. This could that you could you could behave like rude or you could be like egoistic or something. Yeah. So this very like thin line.
Some people call it like no leadership. And when you look to management books or to or certain politicians talk about that also in that way. But that's the art of making decisions. Yeah.
Flat or house?
My personal situation is both. So I love cities and I love landscapes to be direct. I love to be also to live in the heart of the city and not in a kind of the fringe. So already, if it's Rotterdam or other places, that's the place to, because I live to want to. So that means a flat. But I am a nature lover. And I'm a villager in that way also. And you can make, and our designs for urban villages are a bit oriented towards that. So yes, I want to also to be sometimes in a house in a forest. So I'm actually quite Czech, no?
It's totally fine. It doesn't need to be one strict. What is your the most favorite food?
A good vegetarian. Nuanced vegetarian food is the best.
Do we have something like specific? This is like the whole category, you know?
Well, no, vegetarian meal is not like a replacement of a piece of meat by an egg. It has this kind of, when do you establish this kind of fine as a refinement in that sometimes happened. Some restaurants in Prague have that, so more in Copenhagen than in Amsterdam, and in that do complex, say, kitchens that are respectful and that have a rich answer to this necessity to behave more vegetarian in our world, in order to get rid of the stupidity of making cattle that ruins our landscapes.
So when you are kind of short in time, you want to put your energy to the project and to your vision and everything. What about the eating?
Oh, take time for that. I mean, you shouldn't not eat too quick. And good company is nice. So then that saves you also from eating too fast. Because that's also not handy. And not eat too much. And try to avoid that waste in making food or cooking or in restaurants. I prefer small dishes over this kind of giant mountains of burgers and mashed potatoes.
Now we have the one candy question, which means that in Slovakia we have two candies. The first one is called Kavenky and the second one is called Kakaoverezi. And Vini was tasting those Kavenky and Kakaoverezi before our podcast. So now we have very honest answer. Vini, which one do you prefer, Kavenky or Kakaoverezi?
Now, to be direct, I like this Kavenky because it has more taste than and less sugarish taste than the other one. It's more coffee-ish in a way than the other one, as far as I can judge.
Because the second one, like Kakaoverezi, it's called like cacao biscuit.
Oh, that's why this is Kava.
Kavenky is like Kava, like coffee.
Yeah. It's so sweet for me. The coffee is nicer. Even if I don't drink coffee. Yeah? I don't like the taste, but in this case, it's subtly mixed in. It compensates a bit the sweetness. It's far too sweet. Anyway, I hope this my dentist would hate me if I would take this too much.
The last question is a little bit connected to the fashion, because I am sure that you know that we, like an architect, we like the black clothes. Or a lot of architects, they wear black. Why do you think that architects wear black?
Personally, I'm more in dark blue and marine to start with. It's a slightly more nuanced color. Makes your skin somehow, my blue eyes a little bit more bluer. But it's even the neutrality, I understand. So there's two reasons, I think. But it's also extremely boring, I'm aware, that this code of blackness. And that's what I do. It's basically neutrality. What happens? And I also use it a little bit. And I'm also, traveling a lot means that I have to that my clothes have to fit on every location and occasion. So also their neutrality helps, layering and neutrality.
So you actually use it.
I'm not black. I'm less in black. So I'm more, what I say, dark blue.
Okay. That's your color.
That's my color. Yeah. And dark green and dark green to cover every momentum of the day in different layers. Cause that's the second aspect. If you travel, you have a series of like shirts and which you can put on top of each other so that any climate can be organized. and every, cultural environment can be faced.
Now we are at the end of our podcast episode. Let me thank you very much that we could do this podcast with you. It was very, very, very special for me and also very inspirational. So thank you very much, Vinny.
No, you too, for the questions. I think this gives me also a reflection about things and the way how to talk and how the way how you position.